Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for a very special episode, we have, as usual, the internet's Peter Willington.
Hi.
There is Keith Andrew somewhere in the house. He's been gone for a while, but is that Keith I hear in the background?
I am in the house.
He's excellent. Good to know. But we also have a very special guest with us this week. Joining us from all the way across the pond, or on your very own continent if you're listening in America, is editor of 148 Apps, Jeff Scott.
Hi, everybody.
This is a bit of a first for us. We haven't done guests, but we're going to be introducing more new voices, new blood, as the podcast series wears on. How are you doing, Jeff? I understand it's a bit early in the morning for you.
Yeah, the sun is up, but I am out of coffee, so don't expect me to talk too much.
Oh dear. Well, we're kind of at the end of the day. We always do it around about sort of 6 o'clock in the evening, and so generally we're either flagging or Peter's hyped up on energy drinks.
I'm always hyped up on energy drinks at all times. Jeff, I've got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What kind of coffee do you usually drink, or does it not matter?
No, it does matter. I'm very much a coffee geek. There are a few small coffee roasters in San Francisco. I prefer Four Barrel coffee, right, which is in the Mission, or Blue Bottle, one of those two.
Okay. This
is
important.
I've heard of either of these things.
I like, there's a brilliant blend over here. It's called Tesco Economy, and it's about 50 pence, which is
that one of those futuristic instant coffees?
that's amazing. Great. These rehydratable coffee beans are astonishing. It tastes a bit like a 3-month-old Weetabix.
Yeah, just it's got a hint of that. But it goes straight for the heart, which is what I quite enjoy about it. So,
and you mix it up with energy drinks and then fall over.
Yep.
Well done, you. Fantastic. Well, we've got a lot of stuff to cover this week. Not only are we talking about surprise Call of Duty games and the newly released 2K Drive, we've got only 5 days to go until Apple brings out the new iPhone 5S, 5C, whatever it's going to reveal. We don't know. We're going to find out. And Jeff's here to tell us a bit about PAX. But first of all, the update. Popular freemium racer Real Racing 3 has just been updated. There are now 7 new Porsches available for you to either win or buy using gold or in-game currencies. And now, as I understand it, Porsches all look pretty much identical.
Is there not a term for the plural of Porsches? Do you not call them Porsche?
Well, the thing is, people already call it Porsche, don't they? Some people refer to a singular, is it? So
those people are idiots. So, yeah.
But the thing with Porsche is they all look identical. They keep bringing out a new model, and it's pretty much the same.
But they all look like a Volkswagen Beetle that's been sat on, don't they? That's what Porsche is.
Do you think that's what they were going for?
It is the same guy who designed them, actually. So
it's the easiest design to bang out. So they just got
let's squash it down and.
That'll do. Put the engine in the wrong place. So there's 7 new ones that you can go for, but there's also a new series you can participate in too. You're going to need 15 trophies in order to unlock it, but it's called the 50 Years of the 911 series, which I imagine is... That sounds like a slideshow with, like, just 100 pictures of the same car in different colours. Apparently, there's also a VIP service in which you can buy one-off app purchases to mark a car as VIP, which gives you instant deliveries for all upgrades to the vehicle. Games are getting complicated now.
This is all that free-to-play stuff, isn't it?
It really is. It's getting very confusing. There's all this bureaucracy involved now. Seems exhausting. But yeah, that's all available for Real Racing 3. Making things a bit easier, we covered Unmechanical, which was a kind of sort of quasi-platformer float-em-up thing, which you control a little robotic head with a kind of rotor blade on the top, and you have to guide him through a series of subterranean environments, floating around, unlocking doors, flicking switches, that sort of thing. It was okay. It wasn't quite as good as the PC version. It sort of suffered a little on the transition to touchscreen, but if you fancy to go anyway, it's available for free right now. It usually costs about, you know, a couple of bucks, something like that. But you can download it for free. It looks really good, and it was kind of a project done with a couple of developers in collusion with the guys behind Unreal. They got advice from them and whatnot. So it's very, very pretty, and still totally playable, just not quite as good as it was on PC. But for free, you can't really complain. So check it out. Blastoise. Catapie. Pidgeotto. These are just some of the ridiculous names that you'll find in a game of Pokemon. Which leads me neatly onto Pokemon X and Y. It's coming out this October. People have been waiting for it for quite a while and getting very excited over all the new silly named creatures they'll be able to catch and train and pit against one another in those fights that they have in Pokemon. You can sort of tell I haven't really played it much, can't you? Peter, you're a Pokemon person, aren't you?
I am indeed a Pokemaniac.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm interested to test the waters with you on this. They've just revealed some news regarding the upcoming X and Y sequel-y thing. Mm-hmm. They're adding a paid subscription service to it called Pokemon Bank.
Do they?
They do. They are. They will. What it is a paid service that lets you keep your creatures on the cloud. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to keep your characters and then upload them to the web, the World Wide Web, and you can keep them on there and presumably transfer them back to your 3DS when you need to, or if you run out of space or something like that. I can only assume. You can store up to 3,000 different Pokemon. And you can isolate them by their name and their attributes, so you can do this kind of search factor on it, which all sounds great if you like collecting the things, but it's going to cost you. They're going to charge you a monthly fee for doing it. Mm. No, an annual fee, actually. They haven't announced the price yet, but yeah, you're going to cough up for it annually.
They have, they sort of announced the Japanese price, I think. It's 500 yen.
What is that? to?
500 yen a year. I think it's about 5-10 quid.
Stop with your mock intakes of shock.
Like, yeah, and it's like lira, isn't it? It just makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, I'm sure the Japanese probably think that it works quite well for them, considering their economy's been growing.
They'll join the euro one day.
Yeah, right.
And crash with the rest of us. I mean, I don't know what to make of this. You guys play Pokemon. Jeff, do you play Pokemon?
Not since I was younger. No.
what are you insinuating, Jeff?
I matured.
Oh ho! I believe it's on.
Right. Okay. Okay. So here's the exciting thing, right? That a lot of people are forgetting about this. Pokemon Bank. First of all, someone needed to write a title for an article that said Pokemon makes bank with Pokemon Bank, but nobody did it. Nobody did it. Why?
They lacked your foresight.
Yeah, exactly. Clearly. I was busy. Clearly. So the second thing is there are in each generation of hardware, there have been versions of this that haven't been internet based. So, for example, on the 64 and on the GameCube, and I think there was a Wii version that did this as well, there was something, I want to call it something like Pokemon Collection or something like that. And it was essentially, you could hook up your Game Boy Advance to your GameCube and you could transfer the characters over onto a GameCube memory card.
Right.
So there was a version of this, you know, floating around years and years and years ago. So this isn't necessarily a brand new idea.
So taking you didn't have to pay for it, I presume.
Well, now, here's the thing. It was a full price release. So
this is a bargain. Is that what you're saying now?
Well, I'm not necessarily saying it's a bargain, right? Because they're gonna try and push this out for as long as possible. So let's say that it costs like 30 quid or whatever it is at the time. And let's say it's going to cost you 5 or 6 quid a year, however much it is. Maybe you get a few years out of it if you hadn't gone and bought, you know, the equivalent a generation or two ago. So I think there's that. And also, I must confess, I have never caught them all, right? And I have never, and I certainly have never caught more than all of them. You know,
like
I
haven't. That sounds statistically impossible.
Well, exactly. So, and you can keep all of the Pokemon. I'm like 99% confident you can have at least one of every Pokemon that you can capture in the game on the cartridge.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, how big is the file size for a Pokemon and all his attributes?
It'll be bytes. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so I don't... So the people this is for are the people who make videos for YouTube of them playing three versions of the same version of Pokemon Fire Red in the hope that they can go and get a shiny version of a evolved Pokemon that's male instead of female.
Like, that's a very niche group.
It's a very niche group, but there are a surprising number of them. And ultimately, Nintendo is the kind of company that caters to that mindset. Like, it encourages that kind of obsessive behavior about its products.
I'm always surprised by how big the Pokemon thing is, because it feels like something that is, like, kind of like Jeff said, like, from the past. I remember it as being a kid, but everyone still gets very excited about it to this day. I mean, Jeff, you said you kind of went past it, I suppose, or you matured, or whatever it might be. Is there nothing about it that makes you consider going back?
Well, I mean, sure, it definitely triggers that obsessive-compulsive thing, but the thing is, so many other games do that now as well. You know, there's Skylanders, there's Disney Infinity, there's a thousand collectible card games on mobile. Mm. I think when Pokemon first came out, it was the first game to really do that, to trigger that. But now I think you're probably better spending your money on medication that helps you cure that compulsive disorder rather than...
Strapping yourself to a chair and watching Hoarders.
Yes, exactly.
Make sure other people do it for you. Well, you'll be able to give it a go yourself. I think it's October 12th, is that right? That's when it's coming out? Something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, October 12th, worldwide. So everyone will be able to get their Pokéfix very, very soon, Peter. I should probably have a go.
You should. This is the one to get. Like, the last release was Pokemon Black and White version 2, which was a little bit
Speaking
much.
Speaking of bureaucracy, yeah.
Yeah, like... But, like, this is the first time that the series has gone properly 3D. The main series has gone 3D. And there is some excitement around it in that they're finally doing something that isn't just the Game Boy, but with better graphics.
They're finally doing it in 3D just in time for the release of the 2DS, which is what all the kids are going to play it on. Oh, yeah. Well done.
Mm-hmm. Is this some kind of video game you're talking about?
What? Pokemon?
Yeah,
Keith, it's it was Pocket Monsters originally in Japan.
If you're going to talk about games, can you give me some kind of warning?
Okay, I've got something for you, Keith. I've got something you're going to like. We've been talking about the lead up to the announcement, Apple's big announcement of the new model iPhone, possibly something to do with an iPad mini as well, and an iPhone cheap version, maybe, so the rumors have it. But I thought you'd like this, Keith, if you bring up the little image. Look at the little logo invitation thing.
Oh, yeah.
With all the little colours. See, Keith, anyone who listens to the podcast knows that Keith likes to analyse the little flyers that they send out before their conferences.
They mean something.
Yeah, because they all mean something. So what do you read in this little flyer? For the listeners, if you haven't seen it, it is the standard white rectangle. You've got a white Apple symbol in the middle, and then you've got a bunch of dots dotted around the screen, all different colours.
I think it means that someone at Apple is taking LSD. Personally,
I was expecting a slightly more comprehensive reading than that. I got to be honest.
Oh, no, it's about the color, isn't it? I thought it's about the fact that this 5C or 5K, as you might call it,
as no one will call it,
it's probably going to be in different colors in true Nokia style, isn't it? It's probably going to have lots
true Nokia style.
True Nokia style is going to have lots of different colors. And I was thinking, actually, this whole 5S thing, maybe that's been misread, and what they actually mean is iPhone 5s. And there's several.
You think that they put it up a case accidentally and it should just be the plurals.
I'm finding it very hard to get excited about this now. It's like bloody Christmas. It just, you think, oh God, here it comes. By the time it gets there, you've lost all interest. And they'll stand up and they'll show this thing and you'll go, no. We'll all go on Twitter and see all of our stupid friends saying, oh, I must go and buy this.
Exactly
the same, you idiots.
Well, that's dusted that topic completely away. Shall we
but I'm looking forward to the colours. That will be interesting when it's.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want a blue one. There you go. Or a yellow one.
Well, the leaked ones are those yellow ones look like hospital yellow, not particularly appealing. Hopefully the others will be a bit more.
Yeah, they look kind of the wrong side of pastel. But if you look at the dotted colours that are in the Apple logo, they exactly match up with the colours that are on this group of five. So you've got a kind of pinky red one, a dusty yellow one, a white one, blue one, and a green one. And that's all the colours in that picture.
There was also some speculation the other day about whether, because everyone's been waiting for this Apple TV with apps and this whole patent, the whole allowing to, developers to use controllers and stuff, is that a step towards it, which I think it all is, but I don't think they'll do that this time, because if they do that this time, then the press will focus on that. I think even if they did the iPad mini this time, the new one, the press will focus on that, and I think they'll want press to focus on these iPhones.
I think it's much more difficult to get excited about them when they're these S versions. So, because basically people get excited when they see something different, when they do a visual redesign. So when the S's come out, it's like, it's pretty much going to look exactly the same and no one really cares. The C is different because it's a whole new line of phones and potentially opens it up to a whole new market of people who are looking for a more entry-level iPhone.
Why C, though? Why C?
Cheap.
That can't be why.
Color, exactly.
Color.
There you go.
That makes more sense.
That's or China. Than... A lot of people think it means China because it's focused mainly for China.
It doesn't roll off the tongue, though, does it? It's 5C. It sounds like a form group. It's
well, the other thing is, if you look at the 5S and you kind of squint a little bit, it kind of looks like iPhone SS, which...
Oh, yeah. That is unfortunate.
that's a niche market. That no one's called it. So.
German neo-Nazi only.
Who like apps? Well, we'll find out for sure in 4 days if you're listening to this on Friday. I also get the firm release date for iOS 7 as well. That's September the 10th. We'll be covering the event on Pocket Gamer, I imagine. Do you guys cover the event as well on AppSpy? Do you do live blogs, that sort of thing? Not AppSpy, on 148 apps?
Do not live blog, but yeah, we definitely post afterwards.
Cool. Okay. So plenty of options for catching up on.
I thought you were talking to yourself there, James.
No, I see the word and say the word AppSpy a million times a day now.
He's just shilling his own website.
It is shameless.
It is absolutely. You would never see me do this kind of thing.
You should see when I post the Pocket Gamer podcast. I just call it the AppSpy podcast.
What?
Sponsored by AppSpy.
What?
Yeah, I know. That's why I don't CC you in, Peter, to any of these things. Sorry. Anyway, let's move away from all this hardware nonsense. Let's talk about software, specifically brand new software that was floated around PAX, the Penny Arcade Expo, that they held in America not about a week ago, was it, Jeff?
Yes, last weekend.
Last weekend. Okay, then. Now, we were busy over here in Europe with Gamescom and GDCE covering news and new releases and whatnot. We talked about it last week. But being as you're here and you have been to the Penny Arcade thing and we have not, we thought you could give us a little bit of an update, a skinny on what it is that went on at Penny Arcade. First of all, what was the actual place itself like? How does it compare size-wise to something like E3 or GDC?
Well, for one thing, it's mainly consumer focused. So, you know, lots of people walking around in cosplay and things like that. And it's it started out, it's focused on board games. So people are playing board games just every spare corner there is in the place. It's they expected, I think, 80,000+ people over the weekend, the 4 days. It was there were a lot of people there. It was very, very packed.
Did you get in on any of the board gaming?
No, I didn't. I didn't have any time. There were just too many iPads everywhere to look at.
I suppose the Gamescom stuff does go consumer-focused in the entertainment rooms, but as Keith will know, who was there, you don't want to step into those, really.
I did do, though. Yeah,
I walked through them, but like...
I wanted to kill everyone in there as well.
What? What was this?
Oh, well, they have the kind of business areas where everyone's pitched up their stands and you can go and talk to them.
The business area.
Yeah, you can do your interviews and everything's fine. When you go into the entertainment areas, the two big bits that are open to the public, it's just like the kind of the disco from hell.
Is it man? Lots of man funk?
Yes. Oh, my word. Yeah.
Oh, yes, there's a lot of that.
I've seen some video of PAX. It looks a tiny bit more civilized. It doesn't look quite so dark.
Yeah, it's in just a standard convention center, so there are windows here and there, and big rooms, small rooms, that kind of thing.
And what were the stars of the show, as far as you were concerned?
Well, I've got three big indie standouts for me. The first was from a bunch of guys from Australia called League of Geeks, and it's a game called Armello. We've seen this already, but they actually had it there. It was playable. It looked very nice. It's a turn-based strategy game. The bad news is, though, it's not due out until 2014, because these are a bunch of guys who are just kind of doing it on their spare time.
Right.
Beautiful game, amazing graphics. It was even buttery smooth on an iPad mini, which I was looking at it on. It looks very interesting. The next one, I would say, is kind of an established PC game called Air Mech from Carbon Games. It's a Command and Conquer type game, but it's not turn-based. It's all real-time. And they are working on mobile versions for both Android and iOS. Great thing about this is they've already got over 1 million players. So once it comes out, just like instantly tons of people to play against.
Real-time strategy. Obviously, we've got a lot of those hex-based games on iPad. They tend to, I think, was it the Shogun one? The Total War guys put one on that was a hex-based rather than the standard RTS, which seems to work well for big fingers on iPads. But the Command & Conquer releases have been pretty weak. I remember the last thing they did was that browser-based one, wasn't it? Tiberium something or other?
No, didn't they recently do... Oh, no, you are right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it was a free-to-play, browser-based...
And it canned within like 9 months or something.
Yeah, because it wasn't great. But we've actually got a new one coming out this week, which is a Rome-style one. Being released, coincidentally, as Total War 2 is released.
Sorry. It's one of the few series I quite enjoy, so it's quite weird.
Hang on. Stop the presses. You like a game?
I do like Total War.
Well, apparently the new one with Roman is a bit tedious.
Well, they're all kind of a bit tedious.
Is that what you like about it?
Keith, what is wrong with you? It's like one of the most hardcore need-to-invest series of all time, and you're into that, but you can't play a bloody game each week that on your mobile phone that takes 40 minutes max. Like, but you can read The Art of War by Sun Tzu and go, oh yeah, this is exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, but you see a game like Total War, it helps a person like me not actively try and take over the world. You know, it's one of those it calms me down.
Preventative measure, is that what you're
saying? Stops me invading someone, you know.
That's good to know. There was a third one, wasn't there? What's the other game that you saw?
Yeah, the third one was kind of the most interesting. It's called Toy Rush from Uber Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I would kind of describe it as a weird turn-based multiplayer tower defense Clash of Clans mashup.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting in that you build both the towers and the creeps. You build your little play field to place your towers on, and then you can take your creeps and play other people's play fields, trying to beat their towers.
Oh, right.
And that's the Clash of Clans part where, you know, it's kind of not real time, but yeah, it looks very good. It's very deep, very interesting.
I've gotten sort of quietly into the tower defense genre. Did you guys, anyone play Rimmed Capsule?
I've not played it, but we covered it.
Yeah, it's a kind of a curious, very lo-fi looking, like mixture of tower defense and exploration and building, and it wound up really kind of being good fun. And I kind of got suckered into Kingdom Rush as well.
Kingdom Rush is good.
Yes, that's the other game that Keith likes in this world, ladies and gentlemen, is Kingdom Rush. And the sequel was kind of fun too. We thoroughly enjoyed it. But yeah, so it was kind of a good show overall.
There were a lot more there. That was they had an entire indie section, and probably half the booths there had something they were showing on iPad, which is a big change from the last time I was there 2 years ago, where there were just maybe a few iPads here and there.
Ah, that's interesting. I mean, are people noticing this, where every time you go to a conference the next year, there's this kind of swollen ranks of the mobiles, whereas, as you say, a couple of years ago, there was like a dude with an iPhone going, look at my game. And now there's just, you know, entire rooms dedicated to it.
Well, like, I was, you know, the things I'm sort of going to at the moment, you know, I've stopped asking the question of, like, are you bringing this to mobile when I talk to indie devs? Because it's like, yeah, of course we are. You know, it's not even a question now. It's coming to PC, it's coming to Android, and it's coming to iOS, and we're developing it on, what's it called? Oh, crap.
Unity?
Yeah, Unity. Like, and that's it. I think it's because people have sort of realized that, like, oh yeah, there's some good games on here, and like, the old guard of consoles now, like, it was just too expensive to develop on for so long. All of the interesting independents making all of this cool stuff that people are taking risks on are just like, well, why don't we just work on these platforms where the barrier of entry is super, super low?
Speaking of Unity, you were in Vancouver this week, weren't you, Keith? Like, looking at Unity.
Indeed, I was looking at Unity.
How does it look? Is it wonderful? Is it beautiful?
They have a very good logo.
Which is all that matters.
It's good in my book. Oh, it's very good. Yeah, I didn't see any games, but Unite, as it's called, the conference is always a pleasure to attend. Lots of developers all getting to know each other, and it was, yeah, Vancouver's pretty damn nice as well.
Oh yeah, you got that Canadian quality of life, don't you?
I have a big Canadian flag now hanging next to me as I speak to you, which was my one and only bit of tourism thing I did. But yeah, no, it was a good conference. Unity is going into publishing.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. So lots of, obviously they've got all the connection with developers there, and developers love them. So they're launching their first few games, I think, this fall autumn. It could be a major player, because developers just generally, they don't just use Unity, they generally love it, and they look to the company to give them all the answers, essentially. So being a publisher, a kind of extension of what they're already doing, but they could snap up a lot of good games there, because pretty much everything uses Unity. So
it's become the Unreal Engine of the mobile world, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, this is all over Unreal. So it on a mobile sense.
Sure.
So yeah, it was a good conference, and they had a very good location. I'm interested to see where they pick next year.
This idea that you go overseas and you do work—it's all a complete fallacy, isn't it? You're just going over and kicking back in hotels in Vancouver, going drinking maple syrup by the gallon. Like that.
Everyone talks about their jet lag, and they say, "Oh, you get it on the way back." I don't. I have it when I'm there. And so the hours I was up, and the roughness I was feeling at certain times is unfair, and I feel all right now.
Does that mean that you were presenting us Brits in a bad light over there? You were looking shoddy and hungover.
They as soon as I had people asking me to say certain words in English.
You see, I've resisted that temptation to do that to Jeff, because I've been respectful of the special relationship that we enjoy with the US. Which means I'm not going to get you to say things like aluminium or anything like that, because it's just crass.
I say aluminium. I think aluminium makes more sense to me, actually. That's one of the few things I agree with. I can't even say the English version. But they made me say teapot. They liked hearing the two words teapot.
Is that why? How do they pronounce that then?
Well, I just don't think teapots are as much a thing over there in general. So
they're just unfamiliar with the word. Full stop.
In fact, I was saying, well, they do drink, the Canadians seem to drink tea, but the fact I was there and saying it, you know, an English person saying the word teapot apparently was something worthy of attention. I didn't charge, but so.
That's very big of you. So we were caught slightly off guard this morning. We booted up the App Store, as we often do on our iPads and iPhones and other iOS devices. Actually, just those two. And lo and behold, what had popped up on the screen but a new Call of Duty game. A proper official Call of Duty game called Call of Duty Strike Team. It just appeared out of nowhere, and we hadn't heard anything about it. And apparently, no one else had either. This is basically a sneak launch where Activision just gone, here you go, Call of Duty game. There you are. And what's more, it's not just a standard first-person shooter Call of Duty game, as you might expect. This one's kind of oddly ambitious. It's a first-person shooter that also jumps to a third-person perspective at certain moments. In fact, it gives you the option later on to switch between them at your own will. So it's kind of a fusion of your standard first-person shooter Call of Duty style game and the more like XCOM top-down tactical real-time strategy game. I've played about half an hour of this. Has anyone else had a go on this yet?
No.
Nope.
No.
Okay, so it's set in the future. There's a campaign mode and a survival mode, which lets you either go through a single-player story as you would usually do, or do a kind of fighting off increasing waves of enemies. I've started the campaign mode and played through the first two or three levels. It's odd. I'm kind of impressed in one way that they've done something that is a little bit different. It is, say, oddly ambitious. The first-person shooter stuff plays out as you'd expect. It's pretty par for the course, and to be honest, I'm not a great fan of it. Everyone knows I don't really like first-person shooter controls on touchscreens. They don't really work, and however well they're done, it doesn't really cut the mustard. And the same is sort of true here. It looks fine, and you can control it, but it's never going to compensate for the lack of a joystick or joypad. The way they've kind of overcome the control issues is they create this auto snap function where arrows appear left and right at the top of the screen, and you can sort of jump between enemies by just tapping left, tapping right, kind of like the auto lock-ons they use in Grand Theft Auto, that sort of thing, where you can just like toggle between enemies, which makes it easier to shoot things down, but also feels kind of like a cheat where it's just, you know, auto locking on between guys. So I don't find it especially satisfying. But the interesting thing is you can tap on a drone icon in the top left corner, and it will suddenly swoosh out to an isometric XCOM-style view, and then you control your squad like you would do in either XCOM. So you're tapping and moving them to cover locations, or tapping and dragging. They can walk or they can run. Suddenly a different set of rules apply. It's initially a bit jarring switching between those two things, but and I say I've only played it for half an hour, so I'm still kind of getting used to it all. I'm less inclined to dismiss this as I have been with some other Call of Duty games, just because it does genuinely seem like they're trying something kind of new.
Is there multiplayer?
No, it doesn't list it in the notes. I haven't tried yet, but it would seem I don't think there is. I bet you that they'll bolt it on later.
Yeah.
If it's remotely successful, they'll just tag it on. But
so why did they sneak it out like this? Like, I can understand why they did it with KOTOR, because it was like a surprise and, oh, we've already got the coverage sorted.
Yeah.
But why would you...
Well, usually when you sneak something out, it's because you think it's crap.
Yeah.
It's that we don't give you a press copy, we don't tell people in advance because we know it's going to get trashed, so we just sneak it out and don't warn anybody. But
they didn't tell anybody at all about any of it, as in they didn't even announce it at any point.
Well, I think I saw a report, where was it? Video Gamer. I think they reported that one of their conversations with Activision said that they were working on an unspecified mobile title, and this was a conversation they had about a year ago. Right. So there's the suggestion that it could have been that. But beyond that, I mean, I didn't hear anything. You didn't hear. Jeff, did you have any rumblings about this?
No, but I heard from IGN that they were pre-briefed on it.
Oh, another so, IGN. IGN were pre-briefed on the Knights of the Old Republic thing as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise, IGN covers mobile. I had no idea.
They do occasionally. Yeah, when it's something big, they have their mobile section. Well, for the rest of us, we just have to find out by going, oh, and downloading it. There are preview videos. In fact, both myself and Mark have uploaded the first mission. We've done a walkthrough of the first mission just to show you what it's like, give you a taste for the gameplay. It's worth having a look because it ain't cheap. It's £4.99 or, you know, $6.99. So it's, you know, it ain't cheap.
It's pretty, though. Looks good.
Yeah, it looks good when it goes out to third person, particularly.
I like the snow. I like that. It's reminding me of Shadow Moses. You know, it's a bit landing somewhere and trudging through the snow.
I'm not 100% on it yet. I have to get used to it. But I'm just glad to see that it's not another par for the course, you know, first person shooter knockoff. So credit to them for that, I suppose. So you can get that right now. The other biggish release of this week is 2K Drive. They'd announced that it had come out, and then we checked in the App Store and it hadn't come out, and then we went back and forth. And apparently it's actually out now.
Mm.
I haven't played it. I've seen a couple of videos, but this is their kind of answer to the Real Racing thing, which was originally going to be free to play, but then they flipped it at the last minute and decided it wasn't. You heard something about this, Jeff, didn't you?
Yeah, I think that's... I saw it a couple weeks ago when they told me they were going to make it premium rather than free to play, and that's always raises a big red flag because generally games needed to be designed for one way or the other. I haven't been able to spend much time with it to figure out how well they did it. This is the first time I've seen the redone version, but yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic about it.
Oh, really?
We'll see. You know, the game, when I saw it originally, it was free to play. It was available on, I think, Netherlands and a couple other app stores. It was overly complex, way too many currencies. Hopefully they've gotten rid of all that. We'll see.
It's got Big Ben.
Your landmark spotting, are you?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's too... I'm quite surprised they branded it 2K. is 2K, do people really care about 2K as a brand?
Yeah, yes, they do. Yeah, absolutely.
Really? 2K's
basketball games are like the premier basketball games, and 2K has a lot of...
That's NBA 2K though, isn't it? I mean, I always saw 2K as a bit like... I know it's actually not that way, but I always thought it's like the budget Take Two. You know, it's like the games that they would put under 2K label were kind of naff. And
I think they were for a long time, but they're definitely not that way now. I do think it has a not as much cachet as maybe they would like, and putting 2K right at the front of it does suggest that they've got some pretty big boots. But like, it does ring with some people, I would say.
Well, the game itself, apparently you can race on road, off road. You can also do multiplayer stuff, so doing stuff with strangers in multiplayer areas and special driving challenges
in car parks. I've heard about that.
That's what they do. Yeah, the dogging simulator. That's 2K dogging. Has yet to be released. But I share your concerns, Jeff, and also Keith, you've spoken about this in the past as well, the idea that you can't just switch the payment model halfway through design, because you're going to wind up with a game that is suited to neither one payment system nor the other.
Unless they've done it. I mean, I don't know how. I never played Breach and Clear, but it was, you know, switched again.
Yes, Robert Bowling was like, I'm going to do it free to play, even though I don't like it. And then he came out a few months later going, yeah, I don't really like it. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, well, I think despite all that talk about saying that they were going to approach it in the right way, is that they didn't. They kind of made a game, and it didn't really work as free to play, so they just... didn't. I don't know, maybe that's the case with this, maybe.
Well, you can see launch trailers and news, I imagine, both on Pocket Gamer and on 148 apps. It costs $4.99 a game, so once again, they've chosen it was going to be free, now it's not. You've got to cough up a fiver or $6.99. Jury's out on whether it's any good or not yet, but there'll be reviews coming on both sites very, very soon, I would imagine.
You can put your face in it.
Can I?
Yep, you can.
Hooray.
Yeah, you can, like in Blood Mask.
Oh, yeah, I did that in the Blood Mask review, and I definitely didn't pull a very stupid face.
She looks on the trailer like she's having some kind of attack, but you can't put your face in it.
You have to work quite hard to make it look good with those face superimpositions.
Your face,
things.
Yeah.
I don't.
Oi. Bombcats has been re-released. We reviewed it a while back, said it gave it a bronze reward, said it was okay. It's one of these flinging games where you ping an exploding cat into the environment, blow stuff up, and... collect things and, you know, all the standard stuff. The interesting thing, though, is that they originally released it as a free-to-play game. It got 100,000 downloads on some of the best days, so like 100,000 downloads a day when it was popular, but overall generated like less than 100 in-app purchases. Didn't really do the numbers that it needed to keep going. So they've ditched the free-to-play model and turned it premium. So they've got now an IAP free version, which you can buy now for 69p or 99 cents. But they've said they've gone in and rebalanced the game.
Free-to-play is so dead, isn't it? God, no one's doing it anymore.
I know. It's not as if 95% of all profits were made through free-to-play games in the last year. It's funny. I get the occasional comments on AppSpy where they're like, "Don't review free-to-play games because you're only attracting attention to them." It's like. Well, regardless of what I or you or anyone thinks about it, that's where all the money is being generated.
It's also such a boring argument. Like,
it is now.
Like, it's like, okay, fine, I get it. You don't like it. That's not for you. If you are so concerned about wanting to give a company money before you play their game, that's completely fine. But there is this other side of things, and it's like, it's not ruining everything at all. Like... it's so frustrating, and it's always the same jerks as well. Like, it's always the same sort of like late 30s asshole who like refers to things as like not you know, oh, these games aren't proper games. Like, uses the word proper. Oh, these aren't proper games like we're used to. You know, old games. You know, nudge nudge, wink wink. Oh, they're not proper games. You know, so
someone take away this man's Red Bull.
It's so infuriating,
it's all,
though.
It's all like, got a bit game trailers, isn't it? It's all...
No, it's... But it's the thing is, though, that it's like... It's this old guard. And there's actually some developers who think like this as well. Like, oh, no, we make proper games. Like, everyone's making games. Like, depending on how much you charge for it, it doesn't matter. Like, you're just making this... You're making different stuff for different people. And, like, to refer to things as, like, proper games and none of that freemium rubbish, like... Oh, it's so tedious.
I have sympathies for both like arguments. I'm not a fan of a lot of what gets incorporated into freemium models, but you can't dismiss entire, you know, systems of payment based on
doing crappy stuff. I can't remember what it was now, but like I saw a comment on some little pissy review, right? And it said like, oh, another rubbish freemium game. And it was like, yeah, like, have you seen the rubbish paid games that are coming out as well? No, because you didn't try it because it was paid. It's a ridiculous argument, because you may as well, at some point, you may as well just go, oh, well, this one paid game's not very good. I guess we may as well write off the entire payment model then.
I think the conversation really needs to be what is good in free-to-play and what's bad in free-to-play, because there are good free-to-play games. There are bad free-to-play games. There's good ways to do free-to-play, and there's a lot of really bad free-to-play games out there. There's plenty of examples of good, but I think a lot of people were soured originally on because no one knew what they were doing in creating free-to-play, and they were just creating these horrible games that were just begging for money every turn, and it just kind of gave it a bad name.
But that model is absolutely changing. Like, and you see the experiments with for example, you know, EA, like with real racing, they're trying out some really interesting stuff with that game in terms of how they charge for it. And I think that's absolutely fascinating.
Boy, do they charge for it too.
But people are absolutely prepared to pay for it. Like
95%, in fact.
EA is going, well, we're making this really quality game that if you download it and play it and it wasn't freemium, you go, this is really, really ace. And by the way, we'd like some money for it because we think it's worth it. And like, I've kind of reached this opinion now where it's like, if you think something's worth money, then you should give somebody money for it. If you just see all freemium games as free demos, right? And then if you pay additional currency or whatever it is, or additional DLC downloads, then that's brilliant because you're supporting that developer. But just because something is free, if, you know, the people who get annoyed about freemium games, they go, oh, I really enjoyed the game, but then I had to pay for it. And it's like, well, but
well, there are people that say that about everything now. I mean, I really enjoyed that coffee, but I had to pay for it.
I get to so many arguments at Asda about that. Or Walmart, actually.
I think the real issue is, though, it's all just a matter of degrees. You know, yes, Real Racing 3 is an amazingly well-done game, but it just nickel and dimes you, and it charges so much for everything. You know, you could easily drop $70, $80 in 1 week's play session, and it just kind of needs to reel things in. We wrote up something this week. The company Strange Flavor has come up with an idea of something called Play Nice for their in-app purchase.
Oh, really? And
the way they define this is there's a cap for a game. Say it's $9.99. That's the most you can ever spend in the game. So if you buy 15 coins for 99 cents, now the highest price thing is $8.99. And it just keeps coming down. Eventually, once you spend $10, everything is unlocked.
That's awesome. That's such a brilliant idea.
And, you know, for Real Racing 3, I would happily pay $40 if they would just let me unlock everything.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm one of those people who I would happily like pay a set amount and unlock everything. But then, as everyone points out, it's like, well, that eliminates the whole whale demographic, which are paying hundreds and hundreds of bucks and therefore allowing everyone else to download it for free and supporting it all. So they kind of need, as all the horrible business conferences I've been to stress constantly, they need those people who are dropping hundreds, sometimes thousands of pounds to finance the game for the rest of us.
Sure.
But I would...
You know, it would take business experts to figure this out, but I would think it'd be much better to have 100,000 small fish than it would be to have one whale.
It's only the big boys that focus on whales. You won't find many indie developers who make a free-to-play game who talk about wanting to get any whales. In fact, they're quite disgusted by the idea, even if they have embraced free-to-play. It's you know, it's the people like EA and stuff that categorically look to entrap these people in that way.
Mm. Well, Bombcats can be bought for 69p now. Getting back to that thing.
Paying for a game?
Oh, yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. The thing about freemium. Anyway, moving away from iOS very quickly, because I want to touch on this before we start talking about what we've been playing. There's some very cool stuff out on Vita this week. It goes quiet for weeks at a time, but this week is like the best week ever. So, You've got Killzone Mercenaries out in Europe now.
Yes.
Yes.
It's not any good.
It's $24.99 and according to our very own Mark, is the best FPS shooter on the Vita by a mile.
Yes, yeah, it's very,
what,
very
what
good.
Are the other, what are the options?
Well, yeah, I know that is damning with faint praise. But apparently it genuinely is kind of good fun. I think it got a bronze or a silver award from us.
Got a silver.
Mm, very good. Yeah, and apparently it's grand. You can get it from PSN. Can you get a boxed release as well?
Yeah.
You can. Okay, sweet. Okay. Yeah, apparently if you're into your first-person shooters, they've finally nailed it and got a good one. Because that Call of Duty one, oh my word.
Oh, that was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, you reviewed that and you got even angrier than you did just then.
That game was absolutely amazing. No, but I've played the... I want to say it was like a pre-beta. Yeah, that was really good. Mark basically sort of echoed exactly what I was saying about it. It's like, you know, it does... It feels like Killzone from the PlayStation 3 squeezed onto your handheld with a couple of cuts, but there's nothing that you go, you know, like it's not a Resistance, whatever the heck it was called, and it's not a Call of Duty. I literally forget what the name of the game is. Call of Duty Vita.
Massively gimped version of the
other. But it's got stuff like it's got stuff like true online multiplayer and like a really big campaign and it's ace. It's really, really good.
Well, you can get that now. It's £24.99, so I guess about $30 as well. The other thing, you can get The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Finally, it has come to the Vita. We've been hovering around release dates for ages. But you can get it for £14.99 or probably $20 for all 5 episodes. If you haven't played it already, either on PC or consoles or iOS or whatever, you probably should. I think I haven't really heard many people say a bad word about it, and I thought it was great. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And Peter, you should still play it when you grow a pair.
You've not played it.
No, I haven't, because I don't like zombies.
There aren't even really any zombies in it, to be honest.
What? Right, okay, no. I've heard this argument, right? It's called The Walking Dead.
Zombies are absolutely
don't
minimal.
Don't poke him, Keith. He's going to go off again.
I've been drinking N-Gin. Other energy drinks are available. And it has done something to me. I don't know what it is.
If you had a fear of talking and asking people questions, then I'd say don't play it. But otherwise,
you had a fear of dialogue trees.
Yeah, right. then you'd say, yeah, don't play that at all. You'll hate it. But okay. I could count the number of zombies. Yeah, there's hardly any in it.
But probably the most exciting thing, I would say, Rayman Legends is out.
Yep.
Which is really, really good, apart from a couple of little omissions, apparently. Mike Rose reviewed it for us, and he gave it an 8 out of 10, saying it was absolutely brilliant, just like the console, the Wii version was. But there are a couple of things that have been removed that kind of stopped it getting a gold.
They've taken out those sex scenes and stuff, has that been?
Yeah.
They've taken out the sex scenes. They've taken out the
sensors.
They've taken out, I think it's like I want to say like 20 levels or something like that, which are supposedly very good, like some of the best levels.
Well, they're called the invasion levels of console version, which is apparently they are going to turn up in a patch later, but they're not there at the moment. And there's also apparently frame rate issues, so you get some real chug when things get busy occasionally. So it's not the best version, unfortunately, but it is still apparently great and the game itself is wonderful still, so well worth a purchase. That's out right now at this very moment. I don't know how much it costs, or do I? £29.99.
Bargain.
So I guess $35, maybe $40, something like that. So good week for Vita. Come sit upon the throne of games. Welcome, brothers, sisters, citizens. Welcome once again to the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. As we have a newcomer to the PG podcast, I'm going to invite Jeff to come up and sit on the throne, and he will tell us about a game that he's been playing this week. Jeff, what have you been playing?
Yes, I've been playing a game called Four Thrones. It's an iPhone and iPad game. It's kind of a new take on Solitaire. Oh. It's quick, it's easy, it's very well created for the iPhone for quick little games, and it's quite nice.
When you say Solitaire, I'm assuming you mean the card version rather than that one with all the pins in it.
Yes, correct.
Klondike.
Is that what that's called?
Klondike's a version of Solitaire, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was like an ice cream bar.
It's also an ice cream. Is it really? that'd be nice.
We don't get them over here, but I watch American TV. And occasionally I pick up strange words.
Aren't you fancy?
I know, la-di-da. So how does it differ from the standard solitaire game?
Well, you have a deck like you do in normal solitaire, but then you have four anchors where you place the cards. Mm-hmm. And it just has slightly different rules in that you can place a higher card on any lower card, and then the king, queen, jack, and ace have special rules, which kind of change the game around a little bit.
Right. So does it make it kind of quicker than the other sort of standard version, or is it?
It's definitely quicker, and it's almost reaction-based, where you just have to do it real quick.
Oh, right. Okay. So it's like a timed incentive sort of thing.
That's one of the modes, yeah.
Is it a free-to-play thing, or is it paid download?
99 cents.
Oh, nice. Okay, then. So, was it Four Thrones, did you say?
Yes, Four Thrones by Simple Machine.
We'll look out for that one. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you very much. Do depart the throne. And we'll get, let's say, Peter. Peter.
Hi.
Have
yes.
a seat. What have you been playing?
Oh, it's comfortable. I've been playing all sorts, man.
You get about a bit, you do, don't you?
I get all about in it. I'm currently playing, for review, Star Wars Force Collection.
Oh, this is the card game, isn't it?
Yeah. So this was my thought process when I was playing it, okay? Oh, this is cool. I've got a load of Star Wars cards, and there's some Stormtroopers on the screen. Okay, I just need to tap on the Stormtroopers, and they all go away, and I get some more cards. Then I keep tapping on the Stormtroopers, and then, I'm running out of energy, but I've leveled up, so it's okay. I can keep going, and then I put... Oh, I can level up my own sort of profile, I suppose. So I can level up the amount of energy points that I have to keep going further, or I can build up something called, I think it's called CAP, and it's to build up my strength in, I think they're called formation battles and also boss battles, and basically it means that the cards are better. My profile is sort of better, and so therefore the cards would be better. And then I go back to just kind of tapping on the screen again, and oh wait, I'm playing Rage of Bahamut for the thousandth time. but it's a very compelling Rage of Bahamut. Card battlers for me are always like, I find something in that loop of grinding out energy and trying to manage, it's not resources in the traditional sense, but like managing energy and then going into battles and playing online with other people and figuring, like making small tweaks to a deck. I find that loop quite engaging as it is.
Yeah.
And I have got no massive love for Star Wars, but I get the feeling that if the card battler is going to become super popular in the West, it's going to require a big license like Transformers did and like Star Wars is going to do. Mm. And it is going to have to sort of use that to bring people in to genres that usually sort of do the sci-fi or the fantasy route. But there is something about collecting a deck of characters that you know that is quite entertaining. It's quite like, I got a Han Solo card and I thought,
do you run up and show people? Stick your iPhone in the face, look, a roguish bounty hunter.
I get out onto my balcony and go, I've got a Han Solo. Yeah, so it's very addictive. It's got that compulsive element to it, but I'm kind of reviewing it at the moment, and I'm kind of thinking, what more is there? Like, you know, is it trying anything else? Because at the moment, and it's Konami that's making it rather than, you know, DNA or Gree or
Mbage.
But it's Konami that's made it, and Konami's made a very faithful Rage of Bahamut clone. They've kind of messed up the load times a little bit. It's a little bit slow at times, but it's very close to that formula. And I think that if you're a Star Wars fan, I think that it will be one to kind of check out. Like, it's the... Yeah. It's the card battler to check out if you like Star Wars. Like, this is the one where you try it out and see whether or not you like that genre.
It's your entry, your gateway drug.
Gateway drugs, yeah.
That's it. To horrible card battlers. Well, that's great. Thank you for sharing your wisdoms on silly card games. Keith?
Yeah?
Have you played anything this week?
Well, of course I have. I've been sat on planes and drinking coffee.
But sitting on planes is where you play mobile games.
No, I was watching telly. They had the Big Bang Theory and stuff on there.
I had a feeling this was going to be the case.
How's Big Bang Theory?
Well, I'd seen them all already, but, you know, I watched them all again. I was in first class in a couple of them.
No.
Yeah, I got upgraded.
Really? What's it like there?
You get your own little pod and it goes all the way back. You can lie down, you get a quilt. They serve you with proper cutlery and stuff. It's, yeah, it's an experience. Last thing on my mind was silly games. It was, you know.
Okay, well, I should have expected this, really. Luckily,
I did see some games at Gamescom, but I can't remember them now.
You're a valuable asset to the team, Keith.
I'll remember them when I play them at some point.
All right, then. Well, in that case, I'll finish up the roundup. I'm quite surprised this week, actually. I've surprised myself by enjoying a Game Loft game. Yeah.
You've sold out.
I have. This is it. I'm now sucking at the Game Loft teat. No, I've been playing Asphalt 8. And
it does look quite pretty, actually.
It's really quite good fun. And I'm genuinely surprised. I played Asphalt 7. I played a couple of the earlier ones too. And I was really not that taken with it. I mean, as with all the Game Loft games, they are all, air quotes, heavily inspired by console versions. So we all know that Nova is very inspired by Halo. And we all know that Gangstar is very inspired by GTA and so on and so on and so on. And obviously, the Asphalt series has been heavily inspired by your arcade racers. So your Burnouts and your Ridge Racers and all that. And this one is still very clearly like lifting. It's got the takedown challenges and the elimination modes and stuff from Burnout, and it's got the drifting that you see in like Outrun and you know, Ridge Racer to a lesser extent and all that sort of thing. So it's still kind of cobbled together from other ideas from other franchises, but they've stitched it together in such a way that it stands up on its own two legs and is really genuinely good fun. Which sort of totally caught me off guard. So you've got these huge branching tracks that go off in all different directions, so you can take numerous routes through every stage. They're really well presented. They've got some really nice little feature bits in it. So at one point, there's a rocket ship that you go around the first lap, and it kind of, you know, they're doing prep on it, and you go around the second lap, and it actually takes off. And you can jump so that you go whooshing through the smoke trails that are left by the rocket taking off into space. Little things like that. Like, that's quite impressive. And the Tokyo level, there's a gigantic transformer sort of standing in the middle of the track, which you can go through as legs. And it's all very, very, like, you'll see some games where they have some really standout assets, and then the rest of it's horrible blocky textures. But this, it's very a consistently smart, clean-looking game. There's a triple boost system. So they've borrowed the Nitro system, again, from Burnout and things like that. But here, it's got three tiers. So you charge your boost bar by driving through little Nitro tanks, and then you tap it once, and you kind of get a boost. Tap it again, and it goes a different color. Tap it again, and it goes, like, blue, and that's your highest amount of boost. But obviously, the more you tap it, the quicker your Nitro runs out. So there's this, like, extra layer of boost management that, again, it's really fun and quite tactical as to when you use it. Other thing is it's quite tough. There's a huge amount of content. There's like 180 levels, and it gets quite kind of tough quite quickly. You can still complete things, and you have to obviously upgrade your craft and upgrade your cars. And they've got like 74 licensed vehicles, so it's got one up on Burnout in that regard. It's got the real world cars, certainly the earlier Burnouts anyway. And it's fun to upgrade them, and it's exciting to get the new cars, and just the physics of it, both the tilt and the tap controls, are really well implemented. You always feel like you're in control of the car, and there's noticeable differences between all of the different models you could buy. And it's just, it's kind of exciting. It's genuinely exhilarating to play. Mm-hmm. And I was really expecting it just to be a kind of another knockoff, a not Burnout game, you know, where it feels like a kind of pale imitation. But, and even though it's been cobbled together from borrowed bits, it's been assembled in a really decent, cohesive whole, which reminds me that, like, there are some very, very talented people at Game Loft. It's just a shame that they tend to make games that are flagrantly unoriginal.
I'm happy to stand up for Asphalt, because I used to review the Java ones, like, 4 or so years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And even on Java, there was a quality to them that was... I mean, there's several Need for Speed games on Java, and they were never as good as the Asphalt games were. They were essentially those two franchises trading off against each other in Asphalt games. And they were almost always very, 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 very similar to the iOS version. And it used to amaze me how they did this, that you'd have this game that actually didn't... You know, obviously you were playing a Java game, but it somehow retained the same spirit. And I think they get away with aping other franchises because there isn't really an arcade racer out there that doesn't ape another arcade racer. I mean, it's one of the genres where everyone essentially, you know, as soon as Burnout introduced certain elements, then everyone else was kind of putting in certain elements like that. And they all borrow from each other. So it's not, it doesn't really, obviously, you know, it has its inspirations, but it isn't, I wouldn't say it's a direct ripoff of any one arcade game. It's like most arcade races, it's kind of a ripoff of many. But it's one that, yeah, they've always been good at Asphalt. It's never, I don't think there's ever been a poor one.
This is the first one that's kind of grabbed me. I did play 7 and I say a couple of the other ones, and I was like, eh, it's another one of these arcade races. But the difference this time is there are jumps. So there are stunts where you're supposed to be able to flip your craft. I keep saying craft like it's a bloody spaceship. You keep flipping your car and try and do either, you know, rotations where you're kind of corkscrewing through the air, or flat spins where you can jump off a standard ramp and then, you know, spin around in the air. And this gets you more air, and it gets you more points, which goes towards your boost. So it's another way of charging your boost. So that's their innovation.
That boost management is something they used to do back in those Java games as well. So there's always been a level to them, though, and they, you know, there was no guarantee you were going to complete it.
With this one, you feel like, I mean, right up until the end, you're sort of jousting for first place, which is really nice. Some games rubber band terribly where they can never get too far ahead of you, but this one, they'll kick your ass. If you drop a few places, then you will get absolutely taken down. I would say that it gets quite hard towards the end, and you can obviously use in-app purchases to top things up. And I would worry that it does start to get a bit hard at some points where you think maybe they are going into this, oh, if you just dropped a few quid extra, then maybe you could do it. But you don't have to pay to complete. And I've had a thoroughly good time with it. And yeah, I would recommend Asphalt 8. How's about that? Which I suppose, as Keith has nothing to contribute, brings us to the end of this podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Keith and Peter and Jeff, for joining us way across the pond. We hope to have you back soon. Will you revisit the group at some point?
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Outstanding. That would be excellent. And we will all gather once again next week for another Pocket Gamer podcast. But thanks for listening. Take it easy. Have a good week. Bye.